G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out. Whitey, good morning to you.
Good morning, Daniel. Obviously, a massive weekend. So many talking points. Massive. As you'd expect when the AFL Grand Final and the NRL Grand Final are on the same weekend, and obviously the Cox Plate as well. But, I don't know, there just feels like there's lots and lots of emotional debates that have taken place over the last 3 or 4 days. They'll be very interesting to see how the show unfolds.
Looking forward to seeing it unfold. Looking forward to getting your input into that. Looking forward to hearing from Adam Ramanauskas, a premiership player himself, of course, with the Mighty Bombers all those years ago, 20 years ago. 20 years ago for Rama. And he looks as beautiful today as he did back then, back in the old days. And he joins us again. These days, manages the Stars. Monday morning Rama is a good Rama. Hello, Rama.
Yes, good morning. It was definitely a different weekend, with obviously the grand final all the way up in Brisbane and the rain that we had in Brisbane during the day. We thought it was going to be this wet and slippery grand final. It certainly didn't prove to be that. And then obviously the mighty Melbourne Storm last night. They had us on the edge of our seat right until that last second of the game. Well, you know, they were down to 11 men. For that last passage of play, and they got the job done in the end. So it was fantastic for the Storm.
Yeah, it was quite dramatic in the end. I wanted to punch Brandon Smith light with the professional foul to take him off from 12 to 11 for the mighty Melbourne Storm, considering they're under the pump. Although they required a real howler from the bunker to get them going, didn't they? That's what they required. Mm. Bordering on cheating is what it was. But we would never say that, because that's not what we would ever say. But, you know, just keep him involved, keep him engaged in the contest for a little bit longer, maybe. Keep Gus firing. What was your highlight? Whitey, straight to you first, your highlight for the weekend? A moment, a passage, an outcome. What was your highlight for the weekend?
Look, I don't think you can go past Dustin Martin. I think that, you know, to become the first player to win 3 Norm Smith medals. So much pressure was on him going into the game because there was almost this expectation that he would play well in the grand final. He didn't start the game particularly well, but to do what he did and the goals that he kicked and the inspiration that he sprinkled all over his teammates, I think to me that just stands out. I mean, those goals, the timing of the goals, the uniqueness of the goals, to me, that'll stand out. I'll remember that for a very long time.
Rama, you got a highlight for us?
Look, it's definitely hard to go past Dustin Martin, but I also think Damien Hardwick is a terrific story. And now a lot of people say, yeah, he's your old teammate, but you know, he was under the pump at the end of 2016. You know, people were questioning whether he was good enough as a coach. And then to go premier, third premier in the next 4 years, is just it's a magnificent coaching effort. And you listen to the way after the game the players talk about him and the influence that he's had over them, not as footballers but as people, and you know, that's the sign of just a terrific person first, and then a terrific coach second.
He certainly had a presence, hasn't he? Certainly had a presence there at the Tigers. He's had great support along the way, clearly, but he's got to be able to find a way to re-inspire those players every single week. And when you're at the top, Ramo, and you've been there, it's not easy to always get the players and get your teammates ready to go to the back to the top of the mountain again and just keep chasing the premierships and keep chasing the greatness, because it's once you've been there once, I imagine it's... You know, whilst it's intoxicating, I heard a lot of players say through the journey that it's intoxicating being at the top of the mountain. It's the drive to get back there can sometimes be quite hard.
I think, Rama, I wanted to sort of butt in there a little bit just on Damien Hardwick. Just some of the comments that were made post-game from him and the honesty about how this season very nearly unravelled for Richmond. Now, we knew from the outside that things weren't going as well as they could have been at different times throughout the course of the year. But for Damien himself to effectively say he had to pull his head in there at one point and got spoken to by Brendan Gale and Tim Livingston around Just the whole cynicism of COVID and the effect it was having, and then how it was affecting him, and then how it was affecting the team. I thought it was a real illustration that you've got to have strong leaders around you to get the best out of you, and that it doesn't always just go the way you think it's going to go.
Well, that's all very well for you to say, Whitey, but let's hear it from Damien Hardwick himself, the coach of the Tigers.
To be honest, I struggled with it, full stop, as well. I was probably the worst. I couldn't understand why we were made to separate from training, and, you know, the early days of COVID, wasn't quite sure what was going on, and we're hearing all this, you know, what I thought was propaganda about the virus coming. I'm sitting there going, well, I can't see it. You know, I'm not seeing zombies walk down the street sort of thing, but the reality is I was really struggling to get my head around it, and the reality is if I'm struggling, the players are certainly going to feed off that energy. So I think I was at my very, very worst early days, and, you know, we spoke to a number of other organisations, and, you know, the fact of the matter is I thought I made a crucial mistake at the start of it, and I thought our form reflected it.
Damien Hardwick there, post-game, talking about the impact of COVID. I think that was... I heard him speaking yesterday too, and he talked about had they not been in... Interestingly, in fact, he spoke about had they not been in the hubs, there was no way that he thought that they would win the premiership round. The hubs actually saved Richmond's season because they were all a bit fractious and there was some things falling apart. They're not falling apart, but just coming asunder a little bit at Tigerland before the hub life hit. Yeah. And once they got back there and they got together and they built this almost this promise to each other, then things changed, it seems.
Well, he spoke about that the previous week after the Port Adelaide victory, that when they weren't in the hub and they were having to train in those smaller groups, he said the club felt disconnected.
Yep.
And then when they got into the hub, all of a sudden they felt this connection again, and they were around each other constantly. They were able to obviously train together, eat and sleep, I suppose, together as well, because in the environment that they had to be in. So when that wasn't the case, and Dimmy openly said it, he felt like we're at our worst. We couldn't connect. We couldn't bond as a team. And the rest is history, isn't it? Like they went up. Yeah, they had their problems. But the thing is, when you have your problems, Whitey, you've got to take ownership of them. And I think, as much as we thought at times this year there was a hint of arrogance about Richmond, they still own those issues that they had off field.
Yeah, they did. But absolutely. But it is interesting when you hear a lot about, particularly in modern times, about relationships and in football clubs and connectedness and all these sorts of things. And I think at the end of the day, however it is they've got it, because it is a similar group, Richmond, to the group that couldn't win a game there at one point back a few years ago, that their honesty with each other seems to be the thing that is getting them through. And if you think of the game against Port Adelaide, where they looked up against it a couple of times, they just go to another level. And that's what champion teams do, and I understand that. But they almost thrive when the challenge presents. And the same thing happened in the grand final. They're 22 points down. They're not playing very well at all. Geelong are playing well. But you never thought Richmond were out of it, because it's Richmond. And the thing that makes it, I find, just so incredible is that, as I said, this is the same team that would just capitulate under pressure in the past, and they don't anymore. And they almost thrive on being challenged, which makes them such a champion team.
Well, the best of the best, that's what they know, they're the best. And that's the beauty of this footy club. And they know they're capable from any situation. This sounds more like a post-7 conversation, I must admit. This sounds more Jimmy Bartelish. We're getting very deep into analysis here about themes and all that sort of stuff.
I don't think we're talking about the mechanics of the game here. I think we're just talking about what makes teams so great. And the Melbourne Storm are interesting in itself, that Penrith had the winning streak going into the game, but you would never be brave enough, unless you feel good, of tipping against this Melbourne Storm because of that same sort of intangible that they have. Now, when you look at the Melbourne Storm, they have only now won 2 premierships since 2012. Well, but they have something about them.
That's 4 grand finals, but 5 years.
Yes, but they've only, that was only the second they've won since 2012. But they have that culture. They have that something intangible about them that means that other teams will always respect them because of what they've got going behind the scenes that we probably, as from the outside, will never really understand.
Yeah, but that's true. But it still comes back to, in the end, that's super important, and that gets you to that point and gives you the belief, I reckon, and the trust in the people around you. And I think that's absolutely critical. And Rami, you'd know this better than anyone, being a premiership player yourself. You've got to have that trust and that belief in that person around you that they'll do the right thing at the right time. But you've still got to be the best team as well in terms of the way you play. And the Tigers have a system that seemingly no one can really defeat, but certainly when the pressure's on. And we saw the Cats have a crack at it for a little while. But when the squeeze came, there's only one team that wanted to be out there as far as I saw. So we'll talk more about that after 7. But just on the NRL, Whitey, let's have a chat about that, because the coverage is interesting. There's an SMS off one of our listeners talking about our references to Phil Good. You've mentioned him one, I've mentioned him twice. I've been thinking about this a lot through the last, well, overnight anyway, about why they do what they do with the NRL. And it's, I think it's purely because they know full well that Melbourne is not an audience that they really care to cater to. And if they can build up the animosity between the rest of the competition and the Melbourne Storm with a commentary team led by Filthy Phil to antagonise and to deride and to give no credit to the best team in the competition again this year, twice in the last 5 years, that's by design. They do that by design to antagonise and get the rest of the Victorian public engaged emotionally in the contest, which I think we all were last night, the way that it was going on. It was a farce, the way it was covered. But they, that first half, where they went into halftime 22-0, apparently they were disappointing in the first half. They were sort of being outplayed a bit. The Penrith Panthers were still the better team in the game, but they trailed 22-0. It's a fascinating dynamic, I think, the New South Wales coverage of the NRL, considering what they're up against.
Yeah, but they don't care. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
They do the same. Yeah, but they do the same with the State of Origin. They do the same with the State of Origin. They don't care about Queensland. The narrative and the whole commentary is around through the prism of New South Wales. So the same thing happened last night. Now, Phil Gould is heavily, heavily connected to Penrith and has for a long time. So he was always going to be like that. But they genuinely don't care about Melbourne Storm.
And, no, that's right.
But on the same way that they don't care about Queensland, all they care about is New South Wales.
Well, I think they care about Queensland more than they do Melbourne.
Yes, but they're both very much down the bottom of the barrel.
I had the volume very low last night on the commentary, so just it's funny for, I reckon, the first sort of 20 minutes of the game, and then you tire of it. How biased the commentary is. But it's a sort of a rinse and repeat type of performance from Phil. Like, if you look at all the Melbourne Storm grand finals over previous years and you go on Twitter looking for comments, it's everybody has the exact same comments. And Whitey's right. When it comes to State of Origin, it's the same thing again. But, look, if that's what we're going to get upset about, geez, we've got a few issues. You're right. It's just antagonising and get a response, because then people are talking about the game on social media. The game's on TV, so it's getting huge numbers. So it's got everyone's attention.
But I don't think. I mean, I don't know. You'd have to ask the people themselves. But I don't think they do it to antagonise. I just think that they just see it through their lens, which is just so narrow. I mean, Peter Volandis is the chairman of the NRL, and he talked during the week in the build-up to the game about how he can't stand Victoria and he can't stand this. He's going to take a day off for Melbourne Cup Day, all those sorts of things. That's just how they think. But what it does do is that while he doesn't probably quite understand it, it does galvanise Melbourne, and I think it has helped Melbourne Storm in the past, this us against them mentality, to be the, you know, almost to drive them, because they know how much it gets under the skin of so many people in New South Wales that they're always there about. So I mentioned before that they've only won two premierships, 2017 and 2020, in recent times. But when you go through, and I'm going to count half the years that the premierships were taken off them, but since 2006, so I'll include 2006, they've played off in the grand finals in 06, 08, 07, 09. They were the two that were taken off them, 07 and 09. And then 2012, 2016, 2017, 2018 and 2020. It's a long time to be then when the whips are cracking, and still, to this day, don't get the respect that they probably should.
So Geelong territory.
Well, the one constant is obviously Cameron Smith through that period of time. He's an artist. He just knows how to control the game and the tempo of the... He was very, very good last night. And, you know, Craig Bellamy said after the game, he goes, look, in all due respect, this isn't the most talented team that I've ever coached, but they're the most hardworking. And that was the performance last night. It was a hardworking performance. It's probably not the best that we have seen the Storm play. You know, Pappenhausen with that brilliant run just before half time to score. There weren't too many other highlights for the Melbourne Storm.
Well, they just put pressure on. They just posed great pressure.
Richmond.
That's what they do.
Richmond.
Yeah, that's right. Now, there are a lot of errors from both teams early in the contest last night too, which were unusual. Maybe grand final nerves got to both teams. A lot of uncharacteristic errors. But they put pressure on you. They make you be good. Geelong were talking about having to be... Geelong Dangerfield was talking about, or Selwood, having to be perfect against the Tigers. And you've got to be perfect against the Storm because they're not going to give you too many looks. And when you do get the looks, if you don't capitalise... Well, it's going to come back to bite you in the bum, and that's effectively what happened last night in that first half, particularly going in 22-0 at half time.
It's a good comment, Half, because against the Storm and against the Tigers, you have to play your best game to beat them. Anything less than your best game, and the Storm and Richmond will just jump all over you.
Yep.
I was lucky enough a couple of years ago now to spend some time with the Melbourne Storm. And I asked so many questions around what the secret ingredients was to their success. And they would just talk repeatedly about, I think Half, we've spoken about this before, just about getting the fundamentals right. It's all about the fundamentals. And if you get the fundamentals right, then some of the razzle-dazzle just naturally happens on the outside. But it's all about getting it. The core to the success is just doing the fundamentals right. So when they're on the training track, it's all about making sure they train efficiently, about getting all those fundamentals right, completing sets of six, all these sorts of things, and then the rest of it takes care of itself. They don't practice it, it just happens. And also the other thing they talk about is always wanting to get better. And you would have noticed and been resilient. And what you would have noticed last night, that some of the comments after the game from the players, that they referenced a lot of their core values as they spoke. And I think it's a real lesson for people in business, for people at local sporting clubs, as well as professional clubs, just that whole thing about what makes them successful.
Well, making them successful is living in hubs, seemingly. The Tigers were able to do it. Melbourne Vixens were able to do it. Melbourne Storm were able to do it. 5 months away from their families. Maybe we've got this pro sport thing all wrong. Maybe we all need to move somewhere and play to be successful.
Well, some clubs, Daniel, couldn't cope with the hubs. But maybe the ones that were connected were the ones that prospered in that. And the ones that weren't were the ones that really failed in that environment.
Let's have a listen to Craig Bellamy, the coach of the Melbourne Storm, post-match after their victory 26-20 over the Panthers last night.
Well, for me, it didn't really feel like a grand final because usually we come down three or four days before. You know, we have fan days at home during the week and we didn't really have that this year, you know. So it was a strange sort of feeling the whole week, which is it's been a strange sort of feeling the whole year. But from what our guys have been through and what their families have been through, I probably would put it up the top of the grand final wins that we've had. I always thought 2012 was probably, I suppose, the special one after what happened in 2010. But this year, you know, there's been some circumstances and situations where, you know, I thought some of the guys might have wanted just to pack up and go home, you know, especially the ones there that haven't had their families, you know, in the bubble. So, but they haven't. They all stuck there through some difficult circumstances at times.
That was Craig Bellamy talking about the impact of the bubble on them at times throughout the season. They're strong enough to overcome all and become NRL champions and premiers last night. Cameron Smith, who knows what the future holds for Cameron? He certainly wasn't saying too much last night, but we think that perhaps that might be it for Cam. Let's have a listen to the skipper after another premiership under his belt.
The whole second half was really tough, and most of that was our own doing, to be fair. I know Penrith played extremely well to keep fighting and to stay in the match, but a lot of it was our own doing and quite frustrating, the second 40. It was almost like we played a completely different game to the first 40. There's a lot of people in this country far worse off than what we are, but I'm purely talking about this competition and what we've had to do to get here tonight, firstly, and then to win it. I couldn't be prouder of everyone in that room.
Would you do it again if you guys had to go through the same situation next season?
That's a fairly open-ended question, that one. I think we need to enjoy what we've achieved tonight, Brad, and we'll just get on with whatever we have to do next year.
You got an announcement for us? Got anything for us?
I got nothing.
That's it.
Get on the Storm in 2021. Get on them.
That's the only announcement you need, says Cameron Smith. Get on the Storm in 2021. That's all you need to know at this stage.
Do you think, Daniel, that at the end of all of this, when we'll look back on what the Melbourne Storm have achieved, I'll put it to you and to Rama and to everyone else, that this might go down as one of the best domestic premierships ever won across any football code in this country. To be away for 5 months as they have, living in, what was it, country, New South Wales or in Queensland Tamworth at some other point? Tamworth, yeah. And then if you remember when they had to try and get up to Albury to practice there at one point, and then that didn't last particularly long. I just think what they've achieved, I don't think that'll ever be done again. That would have to be one of the hardest premierships ever won across any domestic football code.
Well, I don't think you get too many people fighting that. I think it's quite remarkable what they've been able to do. Led by remarkable people at all levels of the business, and certainly the football department. It's an enormous performance from the Melbourne Storm. Premiers again, and it's magnificent to see it all unfold last night.
The best way to describe it is a bit more like, a country footy premiership coming back here. And, clearly we have a lot of people at home that would have loved to have been part of the celebrations as we would have loved to have them here. It was quite unique in itself.
Quite unique in itself, no doubt about that. Trent Cotchin, the three-time premiership skipper from the Tigers, speaking yesterday after the grand final victory. The first Tigers skipper to captain the team to three premierships. History made left, right and centre on Saturday night at the Gabba. Jimmy Bartel is watching it all unfold. Joins us on a Monday morning. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, gentlemen. Wasn't it a weekend for the champions? Wasn't it? It was Richmond champions, Dustin Martin, absolute immortal. Now they use the rugby league term. And rugby league, Cam Smith and the Melbourne Storm, freakish performance. And I just big boy boss, the big time boss, just rides winners in the big time, doesn't he?
Yeah, no doubt about that. It was a weekend for the champs to stand up and announce themselves reinforce that they are still the champs. So spot on, Jim, with that, no doubt about that. What about leading into the game, Jim, with the conditions on Saturday night at the Gabba? Were you thinking that it was going to affect the contest? Now, in the end, it was played in decent conditions, obviously a bit damp underfoot, but decent conditions considering the monsoon that hit through the afternoon.
Yeah, we were thinking, will it be delayed, all that sort of stuff going on, because the race is only around the corner in Doomben. The last sort of four legs got abandoned there, so we thought, would a big electric storm come through? But the Gabba had drained so well, and as you said, after the first quarter, which was a bit damp underfoot and some slippery ball use, it was pretty much footy as normal. Everyone were pointing the fact that if it was wet, it was definitely Richmond's game, but I thought if the ball was in motion, that suited Richmond in the wet. That chaos, that surge at forward, that unpredictability, putting the Cats' taller defenders under pressure. But I thought in the stoppage game, if it was damp, that'd suit Geelong because they're bigger bodied. They like that contested style game. But it was a game of the old-fashioned game of two halves.
Yeah, well, similarly, that's right. Leading into it, because we touched on this on Friday, we didn't officially have the teams on the Friday footy preview. By the way, who won that? Just by the way, we'll talk about that a little bit. No winners. No one got votes. That's interesting. that's a pretty poor performance from four of us not to get someone to get any votes.
in fairness, Daniel, three of the four on the panel picked Geelong, and there was one that picked Richmond.
Yeah, you got one right out of the nine of the finals. You did a good job. One out of nine.
No, I got two out of nine, but I got the one that counted.
One. That doesn't really matter. It's all the same.
We simply all thought that somebody would stand next to Dustin Martin at some stage during the game.
Well, they did. Jake Collins, he did. He just got pushed off too easily, Jim. You were talking about this on Saturday, covering the game. And it was that matchup was always going to be the key one from a Geelong perspective. Well, from Richmond, I suppose, too, if you get on top. But that was the key matchup and how that was going to look. But Dusty just did what he liked.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, just pure brilliance and talent will outweigh just defensive negating ability. Yeah, you have a look at all of his goals. Apart from the one where he kicked from about, you know, outside of 50, that quick one, which was a poor defensive structure when Mark Blitzarves had him. So that one wasn't on Collar Jasny. So I'm not sure what Blitzarves is doing. He dropped off. I know they drop off anyway, but Dustin Martin's the most dangerous man on the ground. You've got the roll around defender. Why you just drop off him at that time and leave yourself in no man's land? His last goal, you know, Reece Stanley fumbles, Dangerfield misses the tackle. So those ones weren't really on Collar Jasny. But I just looked at it, and the more I keep looking at the game and watch little bits and pieces again, is what a coaching masterclass from Damien Hardwick. Like, the brilliance that he displayed, you've lost it in the first 5 minutes, who's so important to their structure and the way they set up and what he can do behind the ball. Putting Bolter into the ruck because, you know, Vlosten's gone down, so Asprey needs to go back to stiffen up the defence. You put Asprey on Hawkins, leave him one out. Pushing your spare up higher to the contest and actually encouraging his mids and forwards to surge the ball forward. A lot more of Bolton and Edwards around the contest. I just thought it was absolutely a brilliant day for Damien Hardwick.
Well, let's go to the start of the game because it was action-packed, wasn't it? I mean, it was quite remarkable the first 5 minutes of the game. We saw Vlosten get taken out by Paddy Dangerfield accidentally, and no case to answer for Patrick from the MRO yesterday with Michael Christian getting involved. And that was the right outcome as far as I'm concerned. Get your take on that as well, Jim. But and then we see the little master in his final game, 357th game, Gary Ablett, go down with that shoulder injury and look into all sorts of trouble. And all of a sudden, there was pandemonium. Foster is such an important part of that back half for the Tigers. The coaching box, I imagine, of Richmond would have been working overtime to work out a plan to plug the hole just until they got the game back on terms.
Yeah, because he's the one who sets them up behind the ball, much like how Tom Stewart does for Geelong. And, you know, he would have been the one who would have been the general in defence because Hooley could barely run. Yeah, like he had that calf and Achilles sort of stuff. So his run and rebound would have been negated with those conditions and the way Geelong's setting up. You would have structured a lot of your back line around Vlosten because this is the start of the game. Bolter would have had his matchup with Hawkins. Grimes would have had his matchups as well. So Vlosten was that one who could have rolled over, helped out, pressed up in defence or got involved. So it would be thinking, geez, do we drop another one back, a spare? Do we back our defenders in? But what Richmond did well was they kept their spare up on the contest. So if you want that image in your head, it's a throw in or a ball up. Geelong would have had, you couldn't see him, you know, 30, 40 metres off the play, Tom Stewart, which was effective early. But Richmond brought theirs right up around near the contest and actually tried to win the contest and take the ball forward from there, especially in the second half.
So, Jimmy, things are going really well for Geelong. After Richmond kicked the first two goals, from that moment on, things are going really well for Geelong. I'm interested, not only you, Jimmy, but the three of you, as to what changed. And when was it that it changed? Because obviously Martin kicks that goal just before half time, but there was a period of play both before that goal and after that goal where there were no goals at all. But when did you sense the game starting to change as Geelong clearly dominated from halfway through the first quarter to halfway through the second?
Yeah, I think it was opportunities missed by Geelong. Myers misses that shot. They miss a couple of shots. So you go from three goals, you should be maybe four or five goals up, which is a big difference in a game of footy, especially that shorter, and what that does to affect both sides' coaching decisions. So I think opportunities or conversion, that played a big role. But what, in my mind, and what changed was I noticed in the first 5 minutes of the second half was that clearly it might have been a cue, might not, just maybe the way I read into it, it's this come forward harder press and speed that Richmond put on the game. So in the first half, they just blazed the footy forward, and there was no like attack with their defensive nature. So they kept their forwards at home, so six forwards at home helped. But you think in the first half, Stewart had ample time to pick up the ball, blitz halves, these sort of guys down back, ample time to pick up the ball, find a free target. In the second half, every time a Geelong defender or mid picked up the ball, they looked up and it was almost stood straight upright, and there was a Richmond player in front of them, which forced another handball. That next player in front of them. So that forward defensive press just got dialed up through the roof for me.
Rama?
The last couple of minutes of the second quarter, Richmond they were pressing hard there. There was repeat inside forward 50 entries, and they were asking more questions of Geelong's defence, and I think early in the game they weren't. Jimmy mentioned Stewart. Stewart was really able just to patrol across half back and do what he wanted, cut off, intercept, get plenty of the football. Stewart had 13 possessions in that first quarter alone, but once Richmond then started to press and put Geelong's defenders under some sort of pressure, Geelong then lost their run because they were playing, the game was played through the middle of the ground rather than the back of the ground. So Geelong were pushing forward through the middle of the ground, winning clearance, winning contest. When they had to find run from the back of the ground, when Richmond then started to get those repeat inside forward 50s, that's when Richmond pushed up the ground. They started to own that territory game from the end of that second quarter. And then it really continued on. Now, a lot of people will talk about, well, why didn't Chris Scott bring Dangerfield up to the contest? Particularly in that third quarter when Richmond started to get some sort of ascendancy. But the reality of that is Geelong didn't have a winner in their forward half of the ground either. Hawkins was well held. Ablett was obviously very, very limited. Rowan barely got near the ball for the entire game. So they actually needed Danger down there to give some sort of extra target. But the other part, and he hasn't been mentioned enough, I thought the game of Edwards was just simply outstanding. Yeah. Martin, yep, deserving best on ground, but Edwards, yeah, he's had nine clearances in the game, and Edwards not a big person, but how he was able to, because we talk a lot about surge, but Edwards was clean. He was clean around that contest to release the ball to some sort of runners. Then, you know, Short comes into the game, but I just thought the last 5 minutes of that second quarter were critical. Geelong had all the ascendancy, they probably needed one more goal, the Cats, but that one goal came to Richmond. So it went from 22 points down to sort of 16, 15 points in, and you know, that was the end from there.
They had in the second quarter, Jim, where they kicked three points in 3 minutes, from 10 and a half minutes to 13 and a half minutes, they kicked 3 points in 3 minutes to Cats. Myers, Tui, and then there's a rush behind to top it off. They get two of those, and certainly the Myers one should have been a goal. If they're able to get two of those, the game's just about toast at halftime. Dusty doesn't even kick that goal leading into halftime, and it's the Cats walk away with their hands in the air saying, how good are we? You've spoken about this a lot through the year, Jim, but particularly it sits out in finals. That you've got to make the most of your opportunities, and the Cats didn't do that in that second term.
Yeah, fundamentals. Fundamentals, we've spoken about it nearly every week. It sounds boring. Everyone looks for the magic bullet, don't they? You know, there's some whiz-bang game plan. But missing a shot, 25 metres out, pretty much in front is as fundamental as it gets, and it goes a long way to the game. Rama talked about it. Shane Edwards plays an absolute blinder because he's clean. That's a fundamental. Not fumbling under pressure. It's doing the right thing. And I'm glad you highlighted him too, Rama, because I thought that was another move too, whether it was deliberate or just part of their rotations. But you noticed a lot more Edwards and Bolton, like, actually inside the contest working their way out, whereas Bolton sort of started on like a forward flank out on the wing. But those two, the surge mentality and that unbridled colt Noah Bolter into the ruck, you know, he just do the ruck work, get out after it. It just creates this momentum, which when it is a little bit slippery and at night, that momentum's so important. And Rama was spot on too. Instead of the game in the middle of the ground, it was played in Geelong's back 50, and that was a change. And we've said this nearly every time, haven't we, Whitey? When Geelong get beaten or the game starts to change, is the speed coming out of their back 50. And it's always been, just for me personally, the mix. They don't have someone who has leg speed or carries the ball first out of their back six.
So I'm going to ask this again about the situation when the game changed. Was there an element of Geelong getting safe, trying to preserve their lead to get to half time, and then their momentum then sort of was lost? Or is that not paying enough credit to Richmond and its ability to lift its level?
Well, I reckon Richmond aren't a team you're going to dominate for long periods of time. You'll get your windows and then they'll have a go. Because we spoke about this before, Whitey. They're too good a team and they believe in themselves too much to let someone dominate them for too long. That goal before halftime from Dusty, I mean, there was a five-minute window where they into that halftime siren that they were all over the Cats. They'd lost their whole momentum and the Tigers got it back. But I don't think they were hanging on or trying to play safe in that period of the game. I think they were just beaten by a team that was just having their turn in the sun and getting on top of the contest, which ebbs and flows in a grand final for most times anyway between two good teams. But it's what happened after that displayed how good Richmond are and the belief that they have in who they are as a footy team and what they are capable of doing any given time. That's what stood out for me, Jim, in that third quarter and what they were able to do, knowing that even though they were 15 points down at half time, that the game could be very much back on their terms very quickly. And the other surprise from my perspective, Rama, was the way that the Cats seemed to fold when that heat came.
Yeah, and that was probably the hard part to watch for a Cats supporter, how it's almost like they couldn't do anything about it. We've all four of us have spoken about this through this final series. In a final, it's really, really hard to shift momentum. And Richmond were able to do that really, really quickly in the second quarter. At the end of that second quarter, they shifted momentum and never gave it back. Geelong through the second half, you never felt they had any sort of momentum. No. I was sitting there hoping rather than going, yes, I know they can do it. So you're sort of waiting for somebody or something to happen. But once Richmond got their tails up, there was simply no stopping them, Whitey.
Yeah, well, I absolutely. I mean, it just was a completely different half. And that's why I asked the questions about where the game changed and why it changed, because there are a lot of similarities from a scoreboard perspective to last year's preliminary final between the two teams. And I'm just wondering whether how much of it was played out the same way and how much of it was played differently and the reasons for the shift.
Yeah, it also comes across because Geelong have been... They've been so good without obviously getting the ultimate prize of premiership because they keep playing in preliminary finals and a grand final now without actually getting the premiership cup that they wanted. But they're just so structured and well organised. But the problem is when you come up against sides who play with, as half you call it quite rightly, that chaos and that manic pressure, it throws your organisation off kilter because they just keep coming and coming at you. And you see when Geelong lost against Port Adelaide, when they went with speed from out of their back line, you put the Geelong defence under pressure, you got them scrambling. Yeah, Richmond, once they dialed up the pressure and just kept coming forward in this just quick nature, get it forward, you'll make mistakes. But it's sort of, you're making mistakes in our, like early against the Cats defence, but you're going to eventually get the results because you're constantly putting them under pressure. And as Rama said, you know, if you've got this speed on this game and this chaos nature, well, Geelong's natural instinct as a defensive group is, All right, back to my man, arm across. If I win the footy, let's take some sting out of the game. Let's just build the footy up. Let's just work our way down the ground. But that just invites the pressure. It gets played back in their half of the ground.
And they played really narrow on the back of that too, Jim. The straight line stuff for the Cats in that second half. When the pressure came on, it was really straight line stuff down the line to all the numbers that the Richmond wanted to be kicking you to be kicking into. And that's the one thing that stood out for me, Rammer, in the second half, that there was a real lack of intent to shift the defence, to shift the game into the space of the Gabba, which they've done so well for the whole season. They used the Gabba beautifully in the width of it.
And that was really evident because it was like they were trying to just hold on, and Richmond continued to push, and Geelong didn't want to take the risk. So it was like, well, if we can limit the damage here for as long as we possibly can, we can give ourselves some sort of opportunity. But the problem was Richmond's pressure just continued to build. Once they felt Geelong were playing safe, they just continued to push and push. But again, Richmond's play wasn't perfect. There was knock-ons, there was kicks off the ground, there was all sorts of different ways that Richmond were going about moving the football. But I thought that was really, really evident that there was at no stage through the second half, Jim, Geelong just tried to, as you know, the new language in football, shift lanes and move the ball from one side of the ground to the other, or you know, that kicks on the 45 up the middle of the ground, just try to break something open.
Your votes, you went obviously Dusty 3, everyone knew that, but Nathan Broad, you had him as the 2 votes yesterday.
Well, I didn't, did I? I mean, no, I thought I had gone Martin short and Edwards.
No, Dustin Martin 3, Nathan Broad 2 and Shane Edwards 1.
All I can say is that's the worst mistake that's ever been happened, because if I put down the name Broad instead of the name Short, when I was being hustled at the end of the game, Lloydy, you've done it a few times. Yeah. You know how it's like it. At the end of the game, you've got to write down the names quickly. I'm glad Broad didn't not win it, or Short missed out by a couple of votes. I mean, I'm sure I didn't see the others voting, but I'm sure everyone gave Martin best on the ground. Yeah, that was so obvious. So I guess the twos and ones don't matter that much. But if I put Broad down, that was a very big mistake on my part. It was definitely Short, two, and Edwards, one.
Oh, boy. A little bit of controversy post-script for Lee Matthews, the chairman of the Norm Smith Medal Voting Committee. Put the wrong name down for two votes on Saturday night. Nathan Broad got the votes instead of Jaden Short. Jaden, I think, had 6 total prior to that, so he would have ended up with 8 and would have been a clear second, which he was anyway, but didn't matter in the end. But just imagine, we always say, what if it happens in a grand final? Well, that's when the Norm Smith voting happens, just by the way. What if it had been a margin of 1 vote and Jaden Short missed out on a medal? That would have been interesting. Jim, you've done that before. There is a bit of... Have you done that before? No.
No, I haven't voted on the Norm Smith before, no.
You just win them, sorry.
But... Yeah, that's sort of a lot more fun doing that sort of stuff. But I thought, as the chairman, wouldn't you just loop the votes back around to Lee anyway? He was the chairman of the Norm Smith. Wouldn't he, instead of just like taking them off him, wouldn't you go, well, these are all the votes anyway?
No, he's a voting chairman. If there's a tie, it goes back to his vote. So it would have been Dusty anyway, had there been a tie. But interesting development yesterday on the Sunday Footy Show, where Lee put the wrong name. Now, speaking of, there's been a correction to the Friday face-off. I won again. Fantastic performance. Mitch Duncan did get 3 votes. A dominant year. Really, I'm the Dustin Martin of the Friday face-off. Like, a dominant year. The big stage came. I just went Wooshka and took all before me. So well done to whoever I was playing for on Friday. Well, you are a winner.
Well, no praise like self-praise there. Half,
well, it's the only praise you get around here, Jim.
Yeah. No, look, I thought you were the best one today, so far today, as far as Friday face-offs go. So there you go.
Andrew Kerr from Cobram, Jim. He's walking away a winner on the back of that.
Good on you, Kerry. What does he win?
Well, he wins a $100 voucher to Ribera's Spice.
Is this like Wheel of Fortune where they go, I'll take the travel goods, the Tosca.
The microwave, the Panasonic microwave.
The microwave, the Tupperware. And
always take the golf clubs. The Tommy Armour golf club.
The golf club. Yeah. Hey, righto, guys.
What's your question?
You're very similar. Put your bucket hat on. Rammer, you slick your hair back. Whitey, you get the beautiful tan and beard. You get it all on. Get your Chris Scott on. That's what I'm saying. Get your Chris Scott on. You know,
handsome man.
Hub life has been great to you. You look fantastic. You, half time, you come out, you know, Richmond start to get a bit of ascendancy. You've played Patrick Dangerfield pretty much out of full forward for two quarters. Super, you know, fit, primed athlete. Been parked at full forward, so should be fresh to go. He comes off firstly, and you two have a conversation, and you come up with, let's go back to the goal square. Is this what you're doing, my three Chris Scotts?
Well, that's at halftime. At halftime, I'm probably coming out with that outcome, I think. I think we'll keep Danger forward for the, because we want to, we get a quick couple of clearances and get some territory. We might be able to snag a goal out of Danger. Remember's point before, I think, was valid. But four and a half minutes in, Jim, that's when I'm starting to get on the phone to the runner and say, hey, you know that stuff we talked about Danger being forward? They've kicked two here, and we probably should get an arm wrestle back in the middle of the ground. We might need Danger for that. Can you just get him up to the pill at some stage, please? That's what I probably would have gone with. I don't think I would have left him down at the in the forward half or the forward third of the ground for as long as they did. Just the one disposal for Danger in that third term. When the game was slipping away, I thought it was odd that we didn't see him around the contest a bit more. That's what I must admit I did think.
Coach number two, Mr. Ramanaskis, with your long sweeping hair.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think at halftime you're going back to what you started with, because that's you're reinforcing to the team, okay, what got us into this position. But then once you're feeling the pressure through that third quarter, I think you then have to go with your best contest players. So that's no doubt, because once Richmond started to dominate the clearance part of the contest, but they also started to dominate the ground level contest as well. So when the ball was obviously on the turf, who was getting to those ground balls first, and Richmond were comfortably doing that. So I think about halfway through that quarter, when Richmond sort of, you know, got back to pretty much level, I would have then had Selwood, Dangerfield, and Duncan up around the football just for a period of time to even go from contest to contest for, you know, the next 5, 6, 7 minutes to see if you can slow Richmond down, because it was really, you know, we're talking at three quarter time at 7-4 to 6-8, so. You know, it's right there. The game's right in the balance, but you could just feel that Richmond had all the momentum. So, okay, what was then Geelong's best chance? Is it? And Chris Scott and his coaches would have said, well, can we win a couple of clearances? Can we win a couple of ground balls and give Danger a chance here? Now, I think we all saw watching the TV, well, they just weren't simply doing that. So you needed Dangerfield up around the ball. But, you know, hindsight, it's a wonderful thing.
All right, Coach White, you've got a beautiful Chris Scott beard on.
What
are you doing? Very handsome.
Oh, well, I would never play Patrick Dangerfield as a permanent forward. He's one of the great midfielders of the last 25 years. He's a game separator. When he's on in the midfield, he gives Geelong the best chance of winning. And if you look at Geelong's output from their midfield after a good start, they couldn't find the footy. And they needed him in and around the ball. And so many of Patrick Dangerfield's best games, in my view, has been when his team's been a couple of goals down and he goes, puts the Superman cape on and he just wills his team over the line, and that's playing in the midfield, not playing as a forward. Now, that will probably change next year with Cameron and Hawkins in that forward line, where they don't perhaps think they need that extra dimension in the forward line, that lack of predictability of always going to Tom, but they need him in the midfield. Why would you have one of the great midfielders in the competition playing as a forward? I don't understand.
Well, to back this up, Jim, so from the 20-minute mark of the second quarter, now, these stats are via Champion Data, so disposals, Richmond 166, Geelong 132, contested football 74 to 61, ground ball gets 52 to 45, clearances 24 to 16, inside 50s 35 to 18. And this is where Richmond, we talk about the territory game, time in forward half, 65% to 35%. What Richmond were able to do, Jim, was score from turnover. 64 points to 2 from the 20-minute mark of that second quarter.
Yeah, and you can score from turnover because of the territory game, can't you? So you're defending up higher on the ground. But I think you've all touched on it, and Rama in particular, you just mentioned there, I would have started the third quarter with Dangerfield, Selwood and Parfitt in the middle with Menegola and Duncan on your wings, or Guthrie or Parfitt, whoever you decide who's the freshest. Probably Guthrie because he was going a bit better, but another, you know, tackling midfielder who can win the contest as well. Because you're highlighted, the halfway point of the third quarter was too late already. I don't understand. The last 5 minutes going into halftime, we all just mentioned Richmond had Geelong under siege. You go into halftime going, they've got us under siege. We've got to win the contest. Best way to win it is the guy who won a Brownlow's poll, 3,500 votes as a midfielder, set the AFL record with inside forward 50s, which means he can win a clearance and territory game. Maybe we get him out of full forward and we play him on ball. Because why would you give a side like Richmond the opportunity, oh, let's wait and see if we win a couple and get it forward to him? Why would you even actually open up the door slightly? Why wouldn't you jam it shut, get your best midfield, play the territory game? Doesn't necessarily mean you have to score three goals or Danger sneaks you one. You've got a Coleman medalist standing at full forward. Luke Delhouse, he got to the club, is a forward. He's there. Gazza was injured, but you've got forwards who have kicked goals. Myers missed an easy one. You've got forwards who can kick score. The fact that you've gone, we don't trust our forward line, so we need to leave Dangerfield down there. It was the whole conversation of the 10-minute mark, oh, why didn't you do it then? It should have been done the first bounce after half-time, in my opinion.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, obviously, I'm sure it would have been discussed at half-time. I just think half-time gives you the chance to take energy out. Like, the energy's gone from the game for a bit. They're not going to be sitting up there for 40 minutes or 36 minutes, however long it was for half-time, the Tigers, with that momentum still flowing through their veins. So I think you walk away out of that thinking, OK, so we can start again here and get things back on track. We just win the contest, but we need... Your last point is valid, I reckon, Jim, that perhaps they didn't have as much faith in their forward line to get the job done. Having said that, it's what had worked for them to get to that point. Danger was that forward mid as opposed to the mid-forward.
But you just said it. So Richmond's big shot they're going to fire, and all coaches and even players know. If you're Joel Selwood and that, you're coming out, and Rama, you've been in this situation half. You know when you've got a side, you know, you've got a bit of a lead. You actually go, this is where they're going to come at us, the first 5 minutes, because they would have been revved up. They're going to throw everything at us. Let's just ride out the first 5 minutes. So why wouldn't you put, you know, as Whitey said, the man who can chuck a Superman cape on, actually at the contest. Don't wait 10 minutes for Richmond to get even more confidence.
So the difference here is Martin is able to float around the ground and influence wherever he thinks is best. Now, I played with a guy who was unbelievable at just understanding moments in games, in James Hird. He would take himself up into the midfield when he wanted. He would take himself, you know, deep forward whenever he wanted. I wonder, and we'll have to hear this from Paddy, obviously, but what was he thinking? What was he thinking standing at full forward? Was he thinking to take himself up onto the ball, or was he simply sitting there and following the instructions?
Well, Rama, they've spoken about that post-game in that they had a conversation while Patrick was on the bench in that third quarter as to what to do, and the decision was made to keep... No, I understand that, but they were speaking about it, obviously, at halftime and through the third quarter. But to me, it still goes back to the point I made about when the game changed. Geelong had a sizeable lead. So even at halftime in a low-scoring affair, surely that's when you try and break the game and you put Dangerfield in the middle. And we keep hearing about this that AFL football now is a territory game. Well, when you've got a lead, get Dangerfield in and around the ball and get the ball in your half and then keep it in your half. Don't worry about how we're going to get into our half. Put the guy in the ball that's got the best chance of actually getting it in your half. Then worry about it after that. I think it's an indictment on Geelong, not necessarily on Dangerfield, that we look at the stats, and it's not all about stats, I understand that. He's had 12 possessions for the match in a grand final. He wasn't given an opportunity to have a massive impact on the game, in my view, with the way the game was played.
But that's what's got him to that point. This is what I was saying before, Whitey. That's how they've played through this last period of the year and even through the finals. He's been that forward mid. He's not that mid forward. In this model of Geelong, that's not who he is.
But that's exactly right, Half. They have, if you look through, he kicked three goals against Sydney late in the year where the game was in the balance and they didn't put him in the midfield. So they'd rehearsed this for a long time to go into a grand final. My view is I haven't played the game and I understand all that, but to me, he doesn't look like a natural forward. He's not a natural kick for goal. He doesn't look like a natural forward, and his brilliance gives him lots of shots at goal as opposed to him being the natural forward that a Dustin Martin is or some of the other great players that have become midfielders that have gone forward later in their careers.
The issue with what you're saying, Whitey, is yes, absolutely. The team was trained for him to be the forward in those high-pressure situations, but Parfitt wasn't getting his hands on the ball.
No.
And Menengola wasn't getting his hands on the ball either. Parfitt only had 7 possessions for the game, and Menengola had 13 only for the game, where, yep, he kicked the 2 goals, but those 2 guys particularly, they're the ones that were having the longer midfield minutes and just not enough football.
And Guthrie was the other one. I mean, he had 14 for the match, but he had a lot of possessions early in the game. But this is, again, another reason why I don't understand it changed, because the evidence was there that the key players that needed to get ball in the midfield weren't, and they kept Dangerfield in the forward line.
You said he's not a natural forward, and it sort of shows out a bit, but that's something you just can't accept. So, like, you see when Martin goes as a forward, he comes up to a stoppage. Well, you don't really see Dangerfield as a forward come up to a stoppage up high. He's either in the contest or he's like the old full forward coming out of the goal square, the powerful full forward. It'd be good if Geelong next year and Danger learn a bit of that role, plays a bit higher up the ground. So then you can take your match up. Like, the brilliance of what Martin does is he looks across and goes, "You're a midfielder. Have you ever spent much time deep in the forward line?" So he'll take you deep in the forward line. He goes down deep forward. They change the match up and he goes, "You look a bit cumbersome. How would you like to come up around 50 and see whether you can work your way back or forward up and down around the ground?" So you just keep moving the match up where it suits. So it'd be good for Geelong. You play Dangerfield for 5-minute patches where he can be around the ball, but as the high forward getting forward. So he's still playing forward half of the ground. Then he can go back to the goal square. Then he can go in the middle. So it gives you another option, but he's always in the play. But at the moment, it's still centre bounce, goal square.
An example of that was when he got a mismatch with Cotchin, when he dragged him and got the mismatch, took the mark, went back and kicked the goal, which is the example you're talking about. Sorry, Half.
No, well, enter Jeremy Cameron. That's what I say. Enter Jeremy Cameron. Enter Jeremy Cameron, Jim. He used to play for the GWS Giants. He has requested a trade to Geelong, and GWS Giants people will not send him to the draft. So he will be at Geelong. I don't care what you say, Jim.
Who said the draft?
I didn't say it. Oh, no, I said it. You didn't say it.
No, you did. You literally just said
it. No, I said it. You didn't say it. I said it.
Yeah.
Competitors don't like conceding that the opposition are unstoppable. I think there's always a way. But in some situations, he's just peerless in the way he plays. He's so strong and such a good kick. Really, I mean, to his chances. I thought, for the most part, when he was dominant, there wasn't much that his opponents could do about it.
Chris Scott, coach of the Cats. Let's see how far he has come. That's what Rob Thomas is singing in the background there. Dusty Martin, he was talking about there, the champ from the Tigers, who is a 3-time Norm Smith medalist, the first time in the history of the game. Now, it's a small sample size because it's only been going for about 40... How long has Norm Smith been going for? 45-ish? 79, just been told. 79, R&D. Who was the first one there?
Johnson?
Was it the Dominator? Did he win the first one?
No, it was before then.
Wayne Harms, the other one. The other one was the first Norm Smith medalist. Jim, you should know that. You're one of the brethren. So 41 years, a 3-timer on the weekend. Watching him play, Jim, what do you admire about Dustin Martin?
Yeah, the moments, especially that game. That was his, sounds strange to say it, and not doing what we all love to do in footy, which I don't enjoy doing, is ranking everyone. We need to find who's the best, who's second best. But that was his best Norm Smith. Like, as far as the moments that needed to happen, like, they were down and out. He kicks the big goal, the banana on the run, you know, just before half time, and then just the freakish ability of the goals and his ball use was extraordinary. Like, there was a few times where you just started laughing. Like, you just went,
yep.
He's playing against not only in a grand final against the best of the best, and he's just making a joke of it. Like, you're not supposed to do that. Like, tackles, just shrug them off. You could almost see it unfolding. He goes, he's probably going to break that tackle and snap it. And it just happens. It just happens. He makes it happen. It's extraordinary to watch. And you just enjoy it, don't you?
It's unbelievable. So he's three grand finals up, 72 yeah. possessions, 44 contested possessions, 26 score involvements and 10 goals.
He averages 24 and 3.3 per, and a premiership and a Norm Smith every time he plays a grand final. It's not a bad performance, is it?
So at the end of 16, Cochin and Martin were criticised for getting far too much ball backward of centre. They were padding their stats week in, week out, people were saying. Now, both players, obviously, now are completely different. Martin is very much a forward, a centre player, yep. and Cochin's very much, you know, at the coalface, just hard work, clearances, tackles, pressure. You know, his possession rate from 16 has dropped completely. But the part that I love about Dustin Martin, and I mentioned him earlier, it's that it's James Hurd. It's understanding the moment, having an awareness of where you need to stand, having an awareness of what stage of the game it's at and what type of influence and impact that you can have. But the other part is he simply makes his direct opponent, whoever that may be, uncomfortable. As you can see, whether you're a midfielder or a defender, you don't want to play on Dustin Martin because you don't know what he's going to do. Now, he's going to get you in the air. He's going to get you on the ground. You know, that first goal that he kicked, that snapshot at the end of the second quarter, that was just pure power. So, taking the ground ball, and then Kolodziejczyk tried to tackle him, pushed off him easily, then's able to kick it, you know, that snap over his left shoulder when his momentum's going the other way. He's so unpredictable as a player.
But see, Rama, you mentioned before about the moments, and obviously you play with James Hurd, who was all about the moments. The thing about Dustin Martin, in such a statistical world we live in now when it comes to AFL football, he doesn't necessarily get a lot of the football anymore like he used to do. It's just that he owns the moments. And in a competition where there are a lot of really good players, most of them are midfielders, if you look at, and I've said this before, if you look at the top six or seven players in the competition, he stands out because he is such a good kick. He is such a good kick of the football. And he makes his possessions count as a result of that, whether it's shooting at goal or whether it's the kick inside 50 or it's the 45-degree kick into the corridor, he makes his possessions count.
And the last part that I want to... He plays without fear. There's no fear of failure in Dustin Martin. Now, he's probably not the footy head and that a lot of other footballers are, but it sort of looks like it doesn't... Not that it doesn't matter to him, but he's just free. He's free when he plays football, and he's free to do as he pleases, and that's through the allowances that Damien Hardwick and his coaching staff give him. Yeah. You know what, Dusty? We trust you. You go and play the game because you're so talented how you think you need to play.
Yeah, and Half, just sorry, before you jump in there, I agree that he doesn't come across as a footy head, but Ram, I reckon you touched on it. His footy IQ is through the roof. Like, it's genius-level footy IQ. And I know it might sound like, oh, that's an easy thing to say, but when he kicks those goals, he's positioning. Like, he's always on the right side of his direct opponent. He gets the right space, you know, for the front and square. He thinks his way through it. He sort of knows what he's going to do before he picks it up or wins the ball. Like I was saying earlier, looks at his direct opponent, goes, well, you're going to probably be, as you said, Rama, really uncomfortable if I put you in these situations. The IQ is through the roof, and that would have been the same with James Hurd. Just watching James Hurd, the footy IQ is just, they're just thinking, well, yeah, the old saying, they're playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers. They're just playing a different game.
Yeah, and it's all very well to be getting the ball across half-back and getting your numbers up.
But you don't kick goals from half-back. Lee Matthews was talking about this yesterday. There's no point going too deep into defence if you're a match winner and a goal kicker because you can't kick goals from there. Dustin Martin had 4 of his 21 disposals on the weekend in the back half. Doesn't even bother. It's not his thing. Damien Harvey's got a great support network to be able to cover off on his opponent. They get rolling. They leave Dusty where the game is won. And if you've got a player like that, that's what you do with them. They are match winners. And you win matches by kicking goals. And that's what Richmond do with Dusty. And as you said before, Rama, he trusts Dustin to do the right thing because he's shown time and time again he will do that for the team and do his role. He just happens to be the best at it. He makes everyone uncomfortable. And as you said, Whitey, it makes his possessions count because he's the best player in the best scoring zone on the ground. And why wouldn't you expose that?
And as I said to my kids on Saturday night, he never loses his feet. So he's never out of the contest.
Got the first goal. Was it the first goal he kicked because he kept his feet in college and he went to the ground?
Yep.
The first one?
Yeah. So, Jimmy, I'm going to ask you this question because you played over 300 AFL games, three-time premiership player, Brownlow medalist, Norma Smith medal. Your resume is very similar to Dustin Martin. But are you... I said similar. It's not as good anymore, unfortunately, as Dustin's.
No, I'm nowhere near
it. Are you in awe of what he can do? Does he have that sort of effect over someone who is similar in the way that he played his football? How do you watch him?
Yeah, well, because I think I've said this first and foremost. I'm a fan of football first, and I pinch myself every day. I get to talk about it, and I get to go along to the footy, and I get to sit next to half. I get to talk with you two guys on Monday. I actually get to share conversations with a guy who's got two now, statues of footy in KB and Lee Matthews. So first and foremost, I'm a fan of football. Like, I grew up, any kid, watching footy, reading books and absorbing it. So I just appreciate it, right? Because I'm one of those people, you got to appreciate greatness when it's here. Like, don't worry about comparing it. Don't worry about what else they can do. And I literally started laughing after each goal when Dustin Martin, because I was like a kid watching my heroes play. And I think you probably ask a lot of footballers and they try not to admit it because, nowadays it's all about, I want to get away from footy. But Dustin Martin would be your favourite player's favourite player. Like, seriously, that's the sort of level he's on. Like, just think about that for a bit. He's doing things that other players probably go to bed and dream about since they were a kid. And he just does it. He did it probably 4 times on the weekend. Oh, geez, I might shrug Patrick Dangerfield after Mark Blitzarves and Stanley have a go at it and snap it in the pocket in a grand final. That's just one of my goals, if you're Dustin Martin. Like, I am in... Awe is a good word, but I'm just so appreciative.
Now, is the nickname just going to be Dusty? Because Wayne Johnson was obviously called the Dominator because of his performances in finals. Does Dusty get a finals nickname?
Ooh,
and this is a late time to bring that up. This needs some time. We've got to flesh this out.
I think it's just Dusty.
Was Wayne Johnston a dominator for what he did on the football field or what he did off the football field?
Let's talk.
It's all footy focused.
See?
So why'd you go there? Whoa, boy. Oh boy.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.